Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers with the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. As I'm sure many of you expected to hear Alan's voice this morning, we are reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. As a licensed private investigator and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and he has to respond quickly, be it a locating runaway teen, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abducted child. Now, I spoke with Alan yesterday and learned that he has been asked to locate a runaway girl being exploited by a prostitution ring. Of course, we wish him the most success in rescuing this child. Our topic today is working with millennials, and as you know, there's a lot of positive and negative discussions around this generation that are being taken place all the time. And joining me today is an expert in the field of millennials. We're bringing in Mark Robertson. Mark is president of New Skills and the founder of New Skills USA. He has over 25 years of experience in the media, entertainment, and technology industries. Mark successfully coached leaders, executives, and managers utilizing emotional intelligence, environmental awareness, and leadership skills. All of Mark's coaching is based on solving the actual problem and issues that the individual is currently facing. This style of coaching resulted in immediate improvement and increased performance for both managers and for teams. Mark has a strong track record working with developmental companies and guiding executives to develop a humanistic and results-oriented leadership style. So without further ado, Mark, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And let's jump into the new book, Working with Millennials. When we're discussing millennials, as far as age range goes, what are we looking at?
Roughly 18 to 34. Which is moving because obviously people are getting older, but that's the rough parameters there for age.
And it appears that they are entering our workforce at a very fast pace.
Absolutely. I mean, at this point, they're over a third of the workforce in the United States. And I believe in the next, within 10 years, for sure, they're going to be 75 to 80% of it. So they're coming in very fast, growing very fast. It's also a hot job market. So they have arrived.
So baby boomers like myself, Generation X, what does that mean for, you know, these different generations?
Well, I think what it means is that they actually come with a different set of sensibilities. They think differently. They work a little bit differently. There's negatives and positives. Plenty of people have said they come off entitled and spoiled, and some of that may be true, but to a great extent, they have a lot of really positive attributes as well, including how to work well in teams, being globally oriented. And, you know, probably the greatest aspect of this generation, I think, is the fact that they respect people. They really have a tendency to respect people right out of the gate. They don't like being judged. They don't like being judgmental themselves. So they have a different way of thinking about that. And I think Gen Xers and boomer managers especially have to take that into consideration quickly, unless they want to get on, you know, the bad side of them.
And it sounds to me like what you're saying is that there's some stereotypes about, entitlement issues and whatnot. There's actually a lot of positive attributes. The team thing kind of jumped out at me.
Right. Yeah, here's an interesting thing that kind of goes across the board, which is boomers, maybe Gen Xers, but definitely boomers, my being a boomer, grew up kind of looking at the problems that had been created or had our parents had experienced, whether it be in society or, you know, personally in work. And Part of our MO was to try and fix that correct those issues or problems, i.e. way back when, the Vietnam War, so on and so forth. Today's generation, the millennial generation, what I've found to be true is they're not really interested in fixing problems that have been created by someone else. They're more interested in doing it their own way within their own group. From scratch and doing it better, which I think is really interesting, very different. And based on that, they do work really well in teams. And in most of the companies I've coached at, I've found that when they naturally congregate and work as a team, and there's a lot less of the me, if you will, within a work group, you know, trying to get credit or take credit for stuff, that kind of stuff. So they automatically kind of come with that. So, they definitely have that attribute.
And for us from, you know, different generations, when we're starting to approach them, and in my, you know, line of work, I think of a lot of millennials are, you know, obviously coming through the job interview process and being hired. Is there specific communication skills to communicate with them or certain things that you would recommend people asking in interviews and whatnot?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a loaded question, I know.
yeah, I know. hopefully I won't aggravate too many people with the answer. But they have different concerns about work than older workers have in the past. They do want to know what they're going to be doing. They do want to know that it's going to be taking them somewhere. There's some sort of path with that. You know, they have certain specific expectations. I remember when I started working, and probably when you started working, you got near something you wanted to do. You got a job, and you wanted to just land the job, and then you'd take it from there. You'd work really hard. You'd figure it out. You'd learn. You try to become valuable and try and move up. They want to know more of that up front before they invest. And many times, that can come off as like, who do you think you are, you know? Them coming off as being entitled, when actually I think those expectations are realistic. So,
and healthy for the organization.
I'm sorry, say that again.
And I would say, you know, creating that is healthier for the organization.
Totally, because one of the things that I always tell people to do is if there's a specific job they're going after, to ask them what they think that job requires. I'm sure they've already read the job description, so on and so forth. But I think it's very important to do that because they're going to have a certain expectation of what they think it will require. It could be unrealistic. It could be realistic. We don't know. But if you don't ask that question, you won't know. And by doing that, then you're able to actually have an interview process that is more realistically based. And you can tell them what it will require and if they're willing to do it, how many hours it will take. What their level of commitment is expected to be. You can get all of that cleared up in advance, and also what they want to do and what they know how to do already. And that can save a company an awful lot of money and time.
Yeah, it's almost like the entitlement is more just having good expectations, and it's our responsibility as the people hiring to provide a job description and a realistic expectation, because that's where it become. I think maybe on our end we're considering them entitled if they're not willing to do things, but if we didn't present them up front, then part of us, there's some accountability on both ends, I think.
Absolutely. I coach on both ends, obviously. I coach a lot of boomer managers and older managers. And, undoing what has been learned is really hard. Of course, the older you get, the harder it gets, right?
Yeah.
But I remember years ago when I was, kind of hopping from company to company, and recruiters would call and they'd send over a job description. I'd look at the job description and I thought, and you should be able to change the world. I mean, they ask for everything in job descriptions, especially for managers or executives, which is unrealistic. Right. I mean, that's not going to happen. So I think, breaking that mold and trying to understand who they are, where they're coming from, and what really specifically you need them to do is a great way to start. And when you start that way, you have a tendency to also get them energized about the job because they'll feel more confident about taking it on. And also your expectations are more realistic.
Yeah, I really like that. And we sort of touched on it kind of inherently in what we were saying, what not to do with millennials. Is there any other kind of tips that come up for you that are just no-nos?
Well, Yeah. We'll have a tendency when we get to know people, especially if you're older, you know, we'll rib each other, you know, we'll call each other names now and then. Yeah. And you know, that was a dumb thing to do, or that kind of stuff. And kind of teasing, kind of half serious, that kind of thing, you know. And if you're an older manager, that tends to happen quite a bit. And I can tell you over and over again, the amount of millennials I've coached that have really been upset about that. Again, back to the respect issue. You can critique the work all day long. You can show them a better way to do it. You can be very firm about them making a mistake. But that's the work. If you critique them as individuals or you put other people down in front of them, you're in for a real rough ride. And I've seen that with my own eyes. I've actually seen it. I have a description of it in the book, a little case study there, where someone made a big mistake within an engineering group of young millennials. And it was like a $5 million mistake, so it wasn't anything small. And their manager, who was 45 years old, caught the mistake. And, you know, and the other team members were a little perturbed at the guy as well, obviously. And thankfully, they caught the mistake before they did the test and spent the money. But what happened was the boomer manager started critiquing the guy how he made his mistakes. And then he started critiquing him as a worker and as a person. Mm. Irresponsible. You know, I can never trust you. You know, how could, you know, he actually called him a jerk at one point. And all of a sudden, right in front of my eyes, I watched the entire team turn against their boss. Wow. Just like that. Even though the guy had made the mistake. And one of them even came out and said, I won't repeat the name on the air, but, you know, called the manager, telling him he was being more than a jerk by doing that. I was just astounded. I just happened to be sitting nearby. And, you know, they even put their jobs on the line with that one. And ultimately that 45-year-old ended up being coached by me.
Yeah.
But there's an example of that. They'll circle the wagons, you know, protect.
Yeah, it's fascinating because the old grumpy part of me says, oh, it's we're too PC and too worried about yada, yada, yada. But really when I sit and think about it, the more kind of evolved place of myself says that these changes and these kind of concepts you're talking about actually make us better people and actually are healthier for the environment to pay more attention to these kind of specifics.
Even more than that, in everything that I've been coaching over these years and, you know, trying to develop emotional intelligence in leaders and managers, because now there's really very few places where you can go and learn it. You know, we've developed simple techniques, problem solving, you know, being compassionate with someone who's having a tough time. And there are three or four steps, and it's very simple. The point being, though, when you do it over and over again, you develop the emotional intelligence in working with a variety of different people. But more importantly than that is there is a one thing that we've been training people on that does not affect the bottom line. So everything you just said actually affects the profitability of a company in a major way.
Wow.
And let me take you through a couple of the issues there. One is, first off, if someone's unhappy, and I don't care what age they are, the generation really doesn't matter, but if someone is having difficulty at work or unhappy or they're feeling that they're being mistreated, I can guarantee you they're not putting 100% into their work. We kind of made this thing up called the 60-40 rule, which is they're probably spending 60% of their time working, getting by, and 40% of their time either being unhappy and complaining or looking for another job.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're still paying them 100% of their salary. So, you know, from a financial standpoint, that's a pretty big negative. And, you know, another aspect to that is when people aren't communicating with each other and they're holding back information or they feel threatened in a political environment where, you know, people may be gunning for you or someone kind of does you wrong, and no one steps in to try and fix that or deal with it, you'll have a lot of times where one group won't communicate with another group. They won't let them know something because they're actually feeling resentment towards them. Or their boss, if they resent their boss, they'll withhold some information, and that information could be extremely costly down the line in mistakes. And that is like a pebble in a pond. You know, obviously, if one group doesn't tell another group, then the work of the second group they're not giving the information to is affected, which affects the rest of the company. So there's a little formula in the book about that. When people aren't communicating that well or resenting or holding back, how much that actually costs the company. The bigger the company, obviously, the more money it costs them in wasted time, let alone in you know, customer satisfaction or, you know, hitting targets and productivity rates and having to redo things, which costs a lot of money.
The impact is you know, insurmountable, it sounds like. And these are, like you're saying, very small dynamics that occur, you know, every day in offices that you don't realize the impact that they have.
Correct. Yep, absolutely.
You mentioned the word emotional intelligence, and I don't know if our listeners are familiar with emotional intelligence. I am a huge fan, but will you briefly kind of describe emotional intelligence for us?
Well, my definition of emotional intelligence is literally what it sounds like, which is, you know, you're aware and intelligent of how a human being works, including their emotions, you know, what triggers them to behave in different ways, what they care about, what they're maybe sensitive about, or if they're hurt, if they're angry. And you become aware of that in yourself. And a rule that we use a lot of here, which is actually more based in Buddhism, is you know, you've heard the golden rule over and over again, cause and effect. But how you're about to say something to someone else, how would you feel if you were getting that message yourself, and to think about that before you say it. So developing emotional intelligence is understanding people and how people work, including yourself, and then fitting that into the context of the job or the work that you're doing.
It's fascinating, you know, we think about where we've come, you know, as a society and in the workplace, that, you know, we now understand, you know, based on your book and other great leaders in this field, that our emotional intelligence plays an integral role of the company as a whole, as our individual functioning. And the thing that I really, in my studies with emotional intelligence, I really like is it's something that we have control over. It's not IQ, where it's a constant thing, where we can grow our emotional intelligence.
Absolutely. I mean, I was having lunch with a gentleman. His name is Shinji Ishibashi. He's a good friend, very wise man. And we were talking exactly about that, what you just mentioned. And IQ, you know, I kind of believe in people, and maybe I'm too much of an optimist, that people can develop, and they can. You know, they can go way beyond the limitations that they set for themselves. But one of the things we were discussing was native intelligence and talent versus wisdom. Hmm. So IQ can be limited, but there's no limit to wisdom. And there's, you know, several actually older generation people that I've coached were like machine shop foremen, people responsible for manufacturing, very, very, very particular job, particular skill, not a lot of education. And yet the CEO of a couple of the larger companies I've worked with would go to that shop foreman to discuss the performance of the company. And it was simply because that person had developed wisdom over the years through experience, through interacting with other people, and being aware of their surroundings. So, you know, many times, I mean, I've worked with a lot of engineers, and I've worked with people like who are in manufacturing and operations. And many times I have found that the people in manufacturing and operations, their ability to intuit things is greater than the people who with, you know, several degrees, MBAs, PhDs. And so their awareness is actually more refined and sharper. They see something coming before it actually happens more quickly. And so I was thinking about that. God, how does that happen? You know, why? How can they do that? And they have less education than the other folks we're talking about.
Yeah.
And what I finally realized was, you know, they've had to depend on that for most of their career. They haven't had a phenomenal amount of education or necessarily doors open for them because of that. So they had to develop that intuition, that wisdom, if you will, to understand a work situation or a situation with another employee or a situation with a company. And as a result, it's more refined. So regardless of the education, they've developed a great deal of wisdom. And wisdom, I think, especially in a company, is incredibly valuable, along with any skill set.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, the ability to understand your own emotion and then to be able to kind of read and somewhat predict, you know, how other people's, you know, emotional state is. It seems to me like that almost supersedes, I wouldn't say it supersedes intelligence, but it's as critical of a component, especially in a workforce.
Sure. I'm sure you've worked with plenty of people who are wicked smart, highly educated, very skillful. And that can be in a variety of different industries. I've worked in the entertainment industry and aerospace and technology, and I've seen it across the board. But if they don't have the ability to understand what's going on with the people around them, it's amazing how little they get done. And also their influence on people can end up negative or not positive, not being able to lead and drive things forward. Another aspect of that would be, as I say it in the book, there are a lot of good managers out there, you know, people who can get things organized, understand project management, understand how long things take, what it'll cost, good with budgets, understand what vendors need to supply, and they're excellent at managing. And then when something goes south with someone working on a team or another individual or executive they're working with, they have a lot of trouble handling it. They have the management skills, but they don't have the leadership skills. And they haven't, over time, developed that emotional intelligence that enables them to handle a real problem with another human being. Back to, if someone's unhappy and or complaining about something or feels that they're getting screwed or they've been lied to, you're not going to get great performance out of them. And that's really where a leader steps in, hence that CEO talking to that shop foreman and bypassing his vice president, who was above the shop foreman, and the director, who was above the shop foreman.
And you would feel intervention-wise that, you know, workforces, I mean, I know that your history has spanned from, like you said, entertainment to big business. Do you feel that, you know, teaching emotional intelligence, even at the floor level to the top level, as far as trainings and in the workforce, would be, you know, highly beneficial?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, culture is developed a couple of ways. So if the leaders of a company decide to take responsibility for the culture of a company versus, you know, and I mean going past just giving a mission statement, that kind of thing, but actually spend a lot of time on developing a specific type of culture, they'll have some control over it. If they don't do that, the workers or the people working at the company themselves, including the customers, will start to create the culture of that company, and it can end up being a negative one. So how you start, another Buddhist phrase is, you know, how you start is how you're going to finish, right? So investing in people when you onboard them, regardless of the level that they're coming in at, is really, you know, a sound financial thing to do. Churn itself, which is, you know, people leaving a company, staying for 2 years, which is kind of turned into the average now, and then leaving, is, you know, phenomenally expensive. You know, recruiting takes not only hiring people to recruit, but time to interview, you know, then, you know, after you do that, you've got the position still needs to be filled. So the work usually isn't being done, or at least not being done to the capacity that it should be being done. And all that time mounts up and becomes money. And then hiring someone new that you don't know, you really don't have any idea of how it's going to work out till they're in there. Whereas if you invested in someone from day one, you build, you know, that kind of loyalty and trust, and also you know where they're at. You know what they can do. You know what their capacity is to learn and grow, and what you should be investing in them in the future so they can do more for that company. An interesting statistic, and it really is around trust and the trust between employees and management of a company, or ownership of a company. A lot of millennials saw their parents go through 2008 and that downturn, and they saw how companies have a tendency to treat people when things get rough. And, right. you know, I've been on the other end of that, where I've been running a company and that's happened. And I understand there's no easy solution to it. But how their parents were treated and cut loose and, you know, no one seemed to care and there was no loyalty from the company, that really stuck with them. And many times when I've been coaching them, I hear that come up over and over again, that they really don't trust. And here's an interesting statistic. 40% of boomers feel that they can trust other people automatically. 19% wow. of millennials feel they can trust people automatically.
Wow.
So, you know, that tells you a lot right there. I mean, that's a staggering statistic.
That's incredible. We've got so much more. We've got listener questions coming through. So if you don't mind, Mark, I am going to ask you to hang on the line. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back soon. Thank you.
Okay, great. Sure.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. I'm your guest, your host, Matt Polacek, and we are with Mark Robertson. The book is Working with Millennials. Mark, I don't know if the listeners do know, but you also do private coaching. And I was reading, you know, tons of background on you and hearing from some of your colleagues, and they just have so many glowing reviews about you. And one thing that stuck out to me, one of the comments was made, was he's simply great at teaching you how to be a good, honest human being. And the other comment that I was interested in actually hearing from you on was one of the focuses of Mark's work is building lasting relationships versus just managing situations. What did they mean by that?
Well, I think what they mean by that is looking towards the future, you know. Because business, and it is moving faster and faster and faster, there's no question about it. Also, people coming into the workforce now, millennials, they're working harder, longer hours for less money. If you do a comparative analysis, you know, to other generations, prior generations. So when someone comes in, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. I kind of coach this all the time, that almost no matter what industry you're in, at least all the ones I've coached in, 18 months from now, that industry will have changed. Maybe a little bit, but it could have changed, you know, dynamically. And most of the time, it is dynamically. There's big shifts and change, mainly from technology. And so, you know, when I have, when I'm coaching, like, there's a lot of millennial managers that I coach who now all of a sudden they have teams that they're managing and they're very young and they don't have necessarily a lot of experience doing that. And so they start kind of getting a little bit of their own stuff back, like, you know, this isn't really what I wanted to do. This isn't what I went to school for, that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I tell these managers to try and indoctrinate into the culture of their group, into the people working for them, is that today, the ability to learn something new, you know, tackle something new, learn it, and then apply it and do it well, is an incredibly highly valued skill in itself. So, you know, versus just being able to have a particular skill at doing something, let's say a software engineer. If you develop a skill on how to manage, let's say, you know, other companies that you're working with in partnerships in a matrix managed type situation, you're learning a new skill beyond that particular skill you know. That in itself, though, the ability to learn and grow and tackle new things is very valuable because industry is changing so quickly. So people that are able to adapt and grow, especially younger people, are going to do very, very well in the future. A lot of older people who I work with and coach are become a little despondent. They're very good at doing one or two things, but they haven't learned new things necessarily or that skill. And it's a little harder now as they get older. It, of course, it doesn't mean they can't do it. And they do it all the time, by the way, and are successful at it. But as a result of that, I really strongly promote younger workers to do that. And when you do that, you start forming relationships with people that are going to last longer than the particular job you have now. So, you know, when you start helping each other work out and you take care of each other, you got each other's back, especially in a team that works incredibly well. When you do that, a couple of things happen. One, you develop pride in not only your work, but in your group. Think of sports teams, and loyal fans. And you also learn how to help each other out and communicate with each other in a way that isn't just some didactic business formula. So over the long term, those relationships can last a lifetime. And as you move either up in your company or from company to company, you're able to actually bring one another along with you and you develop long-term relationships. If you're really smart at the top of a company and you're running something, you develop that skill set to embed that in the people that work underneath you, you're going to have loyalty for a long, long time. There's a little case study in the book about that, about Virgin Atlantic Airlines and Richard Branson, and a steward I ran into. I was on a flight back from London, and he was just terrific, this guy. I mean, I asked for a glass of water, and he brought me like a huge bottle. You know, it was that kind of service. And this was years ago, and I thought, wow. And I started talking to him about how he likes working there and all of that. And he said that he loved it. He had been given an offer by another airline, a competing airline, and he was just about to get married. And they had offered him like another 5,000 or 7,000 pounds a year or something like that. It was significant. And I said, but you're still here. And he said, yeah. So he told his boss that he was going to take the other offer that he had to. He was getting married, so on and so forth. And he went home that night and the phone rang and it was Richard Branson who called him himself.
Wow.
Yeah. Of course, encouraged him to stay and said he couldn't match the money because, you know, pursue for all the other stewards and stewardesses that were working there, right. That would be unfair. He could give him a bump and all of that, but how much he really appreciated his work and wanted him to stay with the company a long time and so on and so forth, the guy stayed and he's been promoted and he's doing incredibly well. But in the way that he gave me service, that's really what piqued my interest, you know. It was like off the charts. He was so good at it and so positive about it. And it was a long haul flight and all of the above, you know. And so there's an example of someone at the top instilling that kind of a long-term view in the people all the way at the lowest level of the company.
That's amazing.
There you go. So I think, you know, Bill Clinton said it years ago, regardless of your politics, he's not a dumb guy, you know.
Right.
And I remember he made a comment about why people elect a president or choose a president or what the job really is. And I think he gave the example of George Bush in September 11th and Obama when he first took office, which was you elect a president to look around the corner and see what's coming, not necessarily what's right in front of your face, mm-hmm. right? So as far as the skill set goes, George Bush didn't run for president to handle September 11th, and Barack Obama didn't run for president to handle, you know, the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, right?
Right.
But that's what they were faced with, and they had to handle it. So that, you know, when Clinton said that, that really, you know, struck a chord with me about Real leadership has to deal with leading, you know, the entire company or the entire group or the entire division, all the way down to the lowest person on the totem pole. And by looking at things that way, you do develop a trust and a loyalty, and you'll end up with, you know, long-term employees that will contribute not only their work and their time and their life to your company, but also ideas, which of course are as valuable or more valuable than anything.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying all the research on the frontline ideas and, you know, looking at when we're hiring millennials, it seems as though, and at least in the company I work for, the bad words are that these are the way things are and this is the way we do things. And we're really looking to always evolve and change, at least in the, you know, the healthcare field. And it sounds like what you're saying is the business world's the same way. It's just ever evolving.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can look at some huge companies that were around that are no longer huge. Eastman Kodak, you know, I mean, there's a variety of them out there. You know, if they didn't adapt, and because they didn't adapt, they got hit really hard. And the same applies with getting this generation on board. And I'll tell you something, and I've experienced it firsthand. I started in the entertainment business and production and stuff like that. And you do work long hours and, you know, it's tough. And they kind of call it the baptism of fire and all of that. And so, you know, it's tough. You put your time in and you get going. But the millennials, aged workers that I've coached, especially the engineers and people at companies like, you know, SpaceX, Hulu companies, kind of young growing companies that are changing the world in my book, the hours they put in, the amount of time they put in, their commitment to their work is off the charts. And, you know, I've said this a million times, and the studies prove it out. The number one reason people work isn't for money. I mean, unless they're starving, of course, then they are going to work for money. But the number one reason is for acknowledgement and accomplishment. So millennials are very concerned about contributing in their work. You know, you spend a great deal of your life working, and then a great deal of your life sleeping, and then there's a little bit of time in between where you can hopefully have some fun. So you better enjoy the work part, and it better mean something to you. And that's something that's really ingrained in them. They're very passionate about it. And when you get them on track, when you know, whatever the bumps in the road are initially, and you may feel they come off entitled and spoiled and so on and so forth, if you really are the adult in the room and you look past that and try and help them and gain their trust, you can get performance out of them that's really
you there? I think we just lost Mark. We will call him back, and we'll be back in 30 seconds. Thank you.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. Mark, you're back with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. So we were, you know, briefly talking about some of the kind of motivating and people kind of evolving at work. And as you were talking, a listener question came in that was it was similar to what we were talking about. And the gist of it basically was that they recently hired someone at work that was very impressive during the interview portion. And once they started, you know, about a month in, once they started working, the performance started dropping off. And as you were talking, and you know, the question is really, what do we do about that? But as you were talking, Mark, one thing that kind of stood out to me is really, what is the focus of this person? And maybe instead of looking at the person that they're not doing something, what can we do as managers and leaders as far as acknowledging this person in the areas that they are contributing, and maybe shifting the focus back to the manager or the employer as to, you know, what's my accountability here?
Right. Yeah. I always kind of put that at, you know, 50-50, but it's really the manager is the one that has to take responsibility for that. And we use a technique, a problem-solving technique, that basically tries to get to the root of an issue or a problem. Many times it's lack of knowledge, but it could be a variety of other things. You don't know what's necessarily going on with someone at home or you know, what issues they may be dealing with. So what you want to try and get at is the root cause of that problem, of that performance issue. If it was there and it's tapering off especially, I can, you know, almost promise you there's something going on that you could find out about. And obviously you have to approach it from the standpoint of, I want to help you with this. So how are you doing? What is going on? And once you figure that out, then it's fairly easy to figure out what to do next, which is maybe they require a little training in an area. Maybe they hit a block, something they hadn't done before. And there's a way to get them either training on it or teach them yourself and then move them off the dime and then get them going again. Or it could be something else. It could be something personal. It could be something at home, which will pass. But most importantly, if someone feels that you're being supportive of them overcoming the problem versus being just critical of them with the problem, kind of throwing your hands up in the air too, that engenders the effort, A, to get better at what they're doing, and B, will create a tremendous amount of loyalty coming from them, which will, you know, bode well in the future.
Yeah, for you
so,
and the company.
You know, always focus on what is the root cause of the problem. Figure it out. Is it lack of knowledge? Is it lack of experience? Whatever it may be, tackle it with them, open up to them, ask them about it, and, you know, even do it offsite. The other thing that, and this is kind of a career path thing that we do, but it would work for this as well, which is if someone is kind of losing their interest, you know, or they're you know, obviously it's up to them to motivate themselves. You're getting paid, you have to do your job. But if that's occurring and they're not sure that they have a path forward many times, that will start to make performance drop, right? People just don't feel into it. And, you know, new things get old too. So one of the things that we teach people to do is to sit down with the employee, have the manager sit down with the employee and ask them, what is it, where do you want to go? What is it that you want to achieve? Once you've done that, go through with them what it will take for them to achieve that. What are the skills they already have? What are the skills they're going to need to learn? What do they think they need to learn? And then make a plan around them actually learning those skills. And it may be they think they want to get there in 3 months, but it's actually going to take 2 years. That's okay, as long as you explain it logically about the time it'll take to learn it, how to go about learning it, what they have to do, their responsibility in developing those talents or skills. Abilities.
But you're definitely communicating to them your investment in them and their well-being.
Exactly. And so when you do that, you also at the end of that process say, let's put a timeline to this. And so we teach this critical path thing that gives you a timeline on what are the milestones for them changing, learning, growing, doing better, instead of the PIP, you know, performance improvement plan.
Yeah.
You know, which has a negative connotation to it. Now you're actually driving something forward in a positive way. And then the last thing and the most important thing for the manager is, and I will dedicate to you an hour a month, 2 hours a month, an hour a week, whatever it is, whatever fits the plan for the particular skill that they have to learn, you have to make that investment in them. I'm telling you, I've taught that over and over and over again with people who had younger workers who they're having a lot of difficulty with. And it's worked literally every time.
It's amazing.
It really has. So it sounds like, God, I can't put more time in it. I already have my own job, you know, which is true. Managers and have a lot of responsibility already. You know. But the truth is, if you invest that small amount of time now, the payoff for you later on, you're going to get 10 times that amount of time back, because they're going to be doing better. You're not going to have to be, you know, looking out for issues or problems or redos, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's incredible. For those listeners that do want to reach out to Mark, his phone number is 310-881-9906. The email is mrobertson@newskills.us.com, and his website is newskills with an S, newskills.us.com. The book Working with Millennials is available on Amazon and any other sites that or any other places they can receive that book, Mark?
I think it's on Borders online too.
Basically anywhere you can Google to buy a book.
Pretty much, yeah.
What's next for you?
You know, I've got a couple other books I'm working on. We're working on actually trying to scale the coaching in a way of utilizing technology more. You know, I'm very much focused on actually practical steps to solving gray area emotional problems. So, you know, trying to set up more techniques and deliver them out there. The book I'm working on right now is about culture, how to, you know, create a great culture or how to unravel the lousy one that you've built. Because I think that has a lot to do with, you know, everything at work, obviously. And you know, culture is such an important thing. I mean, there's companies that were doing really well, but it leaked out there in public that, you know, it was a tough place to work. They didn't treat you well or something like that. And all of a sudden, very difficult to hire new people. So I'm very focused on this culture thing. I think that and I know you can set it up correctly and you know, create a vibrant culture that will go on for years and years and years, that people really enjoy going to work and being there. So that's what's next for me, you know, continuing to coach and doing it internationally now to a certain extent and via Skype and stuff like that. So that's what I'm up to.
It sounds like good stuff. And thank you so much again for joining us.
My pleasure.
And for all listeners out there, tune in next week when our guest is my good friend, Dr. Marv Seppala, who's going to join us to discuss the opiate epidemic, heroin and prescription pain meds, drug overdoses, deaths in the United States. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or check us out and subscribe to us on iTunes. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please let us know and spread the word. Again, thank you so much all for listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.